This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. Assembled before me are Richard Chua of TheatreX Asia, an online journal on the performing arts in the region, Dominic Luke, creative director and co-owner of Monday Show Entertainment, a company that teaches and produces musical theatre productions, and Sharad Kutan, radio producer, presenter, BFM. Welcome, guys.
Hello. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
There have been a proliferation of shows this year. As a result of that, we have not been very faithful doing reviews. We just couldn't find enough slots. Just musicals alone, there have been musicals in English, a musical in Malay, Uda Dandara, and then musicals in Chinese. One Cantonese, one Mandarin. So, filled with musicals, there are plays. Shakespeare took the stage twice. And then there was street dancing, a puppet festival. We're going to talk about some of the musicals, paying particular attention to one that just finished, Cabaret. Dom, you were involved in Uda Dandara.
Yes.
So you can still speak about it, yeah? Richard Chua, you saw that.
Yes, I did.
And so did I. To get us there to talk about Cabaret, as a musical, how well did Uda Dandara work this time around? One thing that was interesting was that they had a Chinese boy playing Uda.
Yeah. Well, I think that this whole bad kind of storyline, it works in that sense in Malaysia because people want to see love story, and hopefully there is certain kind of intercultural or inter-ethnic dialogue happening, which I think that is very good in Malaysia. And as a show, Uda Dandara, to me, it has captured the, you know, the beauty of, I can say it as a Malayan kind of a beauty, in that sense that the music pieces are very reminiscent and nostalgic of that time, you know, whereby all these differences are not that pronounced, and also people of different ethnic races are all mingling and actually interacting with each other more freely than before.
Well, that's just nostalgia, and in fact, it's probably a distortion of
reality,
history, right? Don't you think? I mean, in fact, you know, Malaya of that, the colonial period, was the evidence of what sociologists called the plural society, which doesn't mean diversity, but in fact, a kind of compartmentalized diversity.
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
so, you know, I mean, there is a bit of nostalgia in all things that we do
about
the past.
Because if you look at it in historical terms, yeah, that being colonized is not a good thing. But looking at it from a very grassroots level, actually you can sense that because they all sort of have like one common enemy in that sense.
No, I mean, so, you're right about the age of hybridity, which probably comes from like the 16th century, 17th, think of Peranakan culture and stuff like that, where, yeah, there wasn't a cultural policy to direct cultures. But I mean, just coming back to the musicals, I mean, and your reference to Sepet, which is interesting, that's the Yasmin Ahmad film, right, that again reimagines an interracial love story. And I think that's
it's Romeo and Juliet. As a musical, for you, it worked.
Well, it worked in to a certain extent. It's not like a musical, as in a musical that will sort of awe you in terms of the spectacle. But it's really about the content, the story, and also how this kind of free intercultural interaction actually take place. And it happens in that setting. I agree that it has got nostalgia in it. But I feel that this a time whereby things are going on, it's very chaotic, it's good to have that. Being reminded again of that goodness.
For me, a very interesting approach to looking at race relations in Malaysia. Because if we look at Cabaret, it deals with anti-Semitism. So you have race resurfacing.
To me, I think any good production, good play that has got a very strong political critique can be applied to any country in any political situation. At the end of the day, if you really talk about power, it's really about people in power trying to consolidate power and also to control and also to not to lose whatever they have got. So using that as a background, I think, for Cabaret during that time, that provided a very good background, you know, for the characters to actually surface. In that sense, so that they are able to, you need to have an oppression then in order for hopes and all that to come up, you know.
For me, Sharad, you have come across as someone who is always aware that players are not independent and isolated. They come out of a particular reason, some social construct. When artists say that I like this work for its sake and there is nothing to it beyond the aesthetics, how do you respond to that?
I think there's, you know, the question of the intention of the director or even the writer or the artist is one dimension of the issue. I mean, how it's read by the audience is different. So you might actually have no political intention, but your audience might read it politically and the backdrop will do that, right? And I mean, or you might have a political intention, in which case you frame it in such a way that people read that. And, you know, I'm interested to know the original Uda and Dara, you know, were the boy and girl, were they distinguished by their class position?
By their class.
So class is now replaced by race.
Class and race this time too, because there's the boy, the Chinese boy, who happens to be growing up in a somewhat Malay kampung, and that's why he has the name Uda. He comes from a lower class.
Okay, so you have a working class boy. It was interesting, when we're going to be talking about Othello, there was actually an attempt to Malaysianize the Othello story in a film called Jarum Halus. And there, Othello is played by a young Chinese man. You know, perhaps not successful. It was a beautiful film, actually, shot beautifully. Perhaps not so successful on that level, but an interesting attempt, again, by a Malaysian to reinterpret, you know, classics in Malaysian terms. So,
Dom, you saw Cabaret. Obviously, each of us have gone in with a slightly different way of appreciating it.
Mm-hmm.
For you, what worked, what didn't work?
You know, Cabaret has all this...
It's very theatrical.
Very theatrical. The music is grand. The music was really good. I think they did a good job bringing out the music. Perhaps something that was lacking was actually understanding the context of, you know, this Nazi German era. I think maybe more history could have come out through the musical, because it just felt like it was a show of music and theater, and the story seemed to be left behind somehow. That's how I felt.
So it was a showcase of singing and the ability,
which was done very well, and I loved it. I loved the choreography.
The
singing was amazing.
Yes.
Everything was just beautifully done. Perhaps, you know, Sally Bowles, played by Nikki Palikat, I didn't see how she suffered through these few years that the story was taking place. How was she outside of the cabaret? And how was she when she was in the cabaret? You know, there was no difference. Yeah. And I think that could have showed us a different perspective of the story.
I think Nell actually subtly gave a political comment in the play through the set. You know, the whole set piece is just one piece of flat, right? On stage, but it can be moved. So sometimes it becomes a Kit Kat Club.
Yeah,
opens up like Kit Kat Club. Yeah. And after that, Schneider's apartment.
Uh-huh.
So that, to me, in the last scene whereby when the set folded and the Kit Kat Club transforming itself into an apartment, but all of them sort of like an allusion towards a guest chamber. In fact, you could see that everybody in the KK Club was being devoured into the system, so to speak.
Yep.
And then at the end of the day, what's left is just that apartment. So that, to me, is Nell's greatest political critique, in that sense, in that
kind of. And I actually think that was beautifully staged. That was brilliant.
Yeah, it was brilliant. One set, and that's it. You know, everything could be done there.
To kind of summarize what we've said about the, you know, the musicals that we have seen in this town, one, plentiful, lots to see, and it seems to be like the big thrust in this town. We bring in musicals, and it's because we all love musicals?
As I understand, one is an original Malaysian musical, and the other one is a Broadway musical.
Yeah. Written in 1966 and produced in 1966.
I mean, to what extent are Malaysians producing their own musicals, and what kind of quality do we get from musicals in this country?
Well, the most recent one was The Dollmaker's Daughter by this new theatre company, and it was performed the same weekend as Cabaret. In the experimental theatre in UM.
Yeah.
A couple of people saw it. In fact, both of you saw it, Richard and Dom. Mm.
Yep.
The director is, to me, relatively new in the scene, and she loves musicals. I think what's most important is that, just to address Sharad's point earlier, is that this whole explosion of many musicals happening in town is a reflection of Malaysia's progress, actually. You know, as you become better economically, then people would want to have more commercial theatre productions. And Broadway musicals are like the so-called the
models,
the models are the best product in town. You know,
but it's been satirized. I mean, remember 2 years ago, Theatre Juta Juta was a kind of theatrical production about all these young people trying to create theatre, serious theatre, and constantly confronted with, you know, money bags who say, no, we want musical theatre, you know, and what, you know, because it's easy, it's potentially non-political, you know, whatever it is.
I think it's easier to watch for the audience.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So I think that the idea is commercial success. So I'm just saying that in this satire about the Malaysian theatre scene, there is, in fact, a critique of this. I mean, that musical theatre has come to be seen, at least by the people who wrote
that
play.
Yeah, my point is that... that's why I've always said this, you know. Like, for example, if we just follow Broadway musicals and then we want to be like a typical Broadway musical in United States or in the West End, then at the end of the day, if we happen to reach there, we will just be like them. Or in fact, I don't think we will ever be like them in that sense because of the history and experience that we have. So why not we do something local, something that we can handle, but using the structure and also the knowledge, you know, of Western theatre, you know, and Broadway musical. And coming back to The Dollmaker's Daughter, this is precisely my point, is that I think, you know, there are a lot of young directors who feel that they want to do a Broadway musical. They are trying their best to be there. But trying their best takes a long time, you know, because you need to train, you need to get things done and all that. Coming back to Dollmaker's Daughter, I feel that there's a need for the company and the director to really look at the whole idea of musicals again, telling a good story. Mm-hmm. I think it's important. And also to be clear about how a story should flow in that sense. What I'm afraid of is that a lot of young people, they get romanticized by Miss Saigon, Cats, Phantom of the Opera, and they all say, oh my God, this is really a wonderful musical. I want to be there. I want to be, you know, like Christine or something. But they're not informed, misinformed about, actually, all these musicals have got big budgets and they can do whatever they want to do. But lies in the crux and also the core is really storytelling, telling that story well, and that's it, you know.
We have the talent. Dom, you are in that arena where you are training singers, you are teaching them about musical theatre. We have the talent.
Yeah, I think we have the talent. But what Richard is saying, I think, is very true. We need to learn how to tell stories well. And that's not happening fast enough, maybe. We are learning to sing, to dance and act. But while we do that, we need to remember that the story needs to be told at the same time. And that's actually difficult to do.
You know, I went for a script writing kind of encounter with the man behind many of the films coming out of Australia. He said that, you know, a lot of countries with strong filmmaking traditions also have strong literary traditions. So it is, in fact, the stories produced by short story writers, by novelists, that become the material for others, you know, when they take and they make their films, they make adaptations or whatever. And so the question is, there's in fact a whole kind of a circuit of creativity in which the musical theatre is only one part of, right?
Yeah.
So they kind of, we need to kind of feed off each other and feed off those stories that are appearing, you know, in various places. And I wonder if creative people are reading you know, the works produced by, you know, young writers and whatever.
Yeah, I agree. Because there are a lot of materials in Malaysia.
I think even Udan and Dara had a good story by Usman Awang and locally written. Like, going back to Dollmaker, I think, you know, it's trying to get a foreign concept and trying to produce a story locally.
Yes.
Maybe that could be the problem.
Richard Chua, Dominic Luke, two from the performing arts industry, Sharad Kutan, radio producer, presenter from BFM. Coming up, education, theatre or dumbing down in Shakespeare demystified Othello. This is Front Row in the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Best for money, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng with three people in the studio reviewing a couple of productions. Actually, we've talked more than a couple of productions. We've touched on so many things. Now we have this production called Shakespeare Demystified Othello, and this is a group that has been doing something about related to Shakespeare the last 5 years.
Well, let's not be so coy, Soon Heng.
Yes. No, my disclaimer is I am involved in it. So
it's
your brainchild. No, it's not my brainchild. By the way, it's not. I'm just a participant.
As an educator, I think this is a very, very good initiative. You know, for people who never read Shakespeare, who don't know Shakespeare at all, to actually come in to watch a piece a Shakespearean piece, but yet with explanation that goes with it. Although some purists might not like it, saying that, you know, you should just let Shakespeare play and let people go understand it and don't explain things. But I think in Malaysia, you need that explanation so that people know what's happening and all that. So there are, it's a difference in terms of strategies. But I feel that this strategy is apt, and also it is good, actually, for theatre and drama education in Malaysia.
Is this dumbing down?
Well, you know, I mean, I must say I was very impressed when I watched it, because it's the first of the series that your company has done, Suning. And so I was thinking, I didn't know what to expect. But what I saw, I really liked, because I did have expectations that this was about education and appreciation, right? And so as somebody who studied Shakespeare at A-level and O-levels, I know how difficult the language of Shakespeare is. The stories, I think, are pretty basic and are quite universal, which is why they've traveled so far and in so many different mediums.
And because they've been around for such a long time, they seep into popular culture also.
Absolutely. They're everywhere, right? But in trying to kind of get people to appreciate the language of Shakespeare, there needs to be a bridge. I mean, the very meanings of words have changed over the last 400 years since some of these, you know, these plays were written. So how else? I don't think it's fair to say, well, you know, was it dumbing down? Because I think the intention was quite different. Was it theatrical? Of course it was. And, you know, the performance of those bits and even the in-betweens are very thought out and staged. And this sounds like a huge amount of flattery, and I'm sure you'll buy me a meal after this. But more importantly, I think for those who are disappointed, and people I know who preferred your production of Hamlet, for instance, because in there you created a very complex structure. I believe there were like five Hamlets, and there was much more kind of critical analysis or deconstructed analysis of the play. And that might have appealed to somebody who's in theatre, and you know how the arts has become very meta. It's constantly looking at itself. It's musicals about musicals, films about films, plays about plays. This wasn't. I mean, Othello wasn't. It was straight. And like in Jarum Halos, that film about Othello that uses the Othello story, it's telling that story again about jealousy, about sexual rivalry, about, you know, intention, evil. And so I think on that level, it worked. It worked great.
At another level, I think for the theatre community in Malaysia, oh, I don't know how to say this, but Sun Heng, you did very well, okay? This is not flattery, because I just want to use this as a case in point. It's the way how you deliver the lines, you know? You don't need to have an accent. You just need to have a neutral English accent, and you make sure that the lines are being delivered with all the pentameter considerations. And also the emotions and how where are the emphasis and all that. I think those things are done very, very well. We are able to appreciate it as it is and not really with some kind of a funny accent from some other places. And this is something that I feel that is important, because a lot of actors, I think in Malaysia and also in other places, is that they kind of forget how to deliver lines in English and to make sure that, you know, every single word is a unit on its own, every single sentence is a unit on its own, and how do you focus on the various aspects, because there are many meanings behind it, you know, not just the text but also the subtext. And these are the things that I feel that Othello has done well, where students come in and they know where to look at. And it actually helps the teachers to go back and say that, you know, using the explanation, not only just the story, but also how the lines are being delivered.
While I am aware that teachers were quite pleased with the production, my concern has always been they are pleased because the students now know the storyline and picked up certain things. But are they picking it up from the play or the parts that were played in Shakespeare's language, or were they picking it up from the narration?
What does it really matter? I mean, in some sense, the whole thing hangs together, right? What you do is you have parts of the play and then you accelerate, you chop it up. And so, and the bridge is an explanation both of what's happened in the intervening scenes, but also the kind of critical commentary on the language and such. I mean, all of which, I think, builds a sense of the story, And that's sufficient. I mean, I don't know what kind of purist is out there who would say, look at Kurosawa's Game of Thrones and you know, rail against the fact that this was a Macbeth turned into a Japanese movie. I mean, you know, powerful stuff. I don't understand Japanese, so I don't know how he found a language in the Japanese setting that's classical that kind of matched the Shakespearean. I don't know. I only watched it on the surface, right? So for me, it's like, doesn't really
matter. But it worked for you, though. It worked for you.
I mean, Kurosawa's movie worked for me. And what you did and your team did, or your troupe did, rather, was to really tell us a story and tell it well in an entertaining fashion with some level of criticality. I think if you are an actor, I think it must have been terribly difficult to kind of constantly sort of switch out of character. And yes, of course, what is lost is because it's shortened. The development of characters, the feel. I mean, how does the character change so dramatically? Maybe you can't go along with Othello's journey, you know, as he sinks deeper into depression and suspicion because it's moved too fast, because you have these accelerated bits. Okay, yeah, I think that was difficult. And first, the night we went with my friends, people were laughing at really traumatic scenes, and it was like, okay, this is a typical Malaysian response to something uncomfortable, so they laugh, right? But maybe it's also because they didn't have the time to kind of enter into the space of the theater production, into the story,
into that particular scene where the character is slowly slipping and not hanging on to his love for Desdemona, so to speak.
Yeah. So yeah, I think those are the.
I want to play a couple of clips of people who made comments.
I really like the format where the mystified, mixed explanation, narration and explanation, intermingle that with the play itself, and they chose certain scenarios, certain acts out of the play which they thought I would be able to give a good summary of the play. I really like that. A full play apparently would take hours to watch, and you know, to jump straight into that commitment, to commit a few hours to a play that arguably some of the lines, you know, it's not exactly words that we use every day, not in a structure that we converse in every day, would be quite difficult, would be quite a huge commitment to make. I like Shakespeare the Mystified's way of doing it, particularly for beginners. It definitely helps me understand the play, understand the background and the characters, the main characters. And so when a full play comes along, I would definitely be more open to watch it compared to before. Of course, the alternative is to read sort of like Hamlet for Dummies or Othello for Dummies, but to watch it in action is definitely much more interesting. The explanation really helps a lot too.
Another one.
This is my first actual experience watching a Shakespeare play live. I've never really attended any live performances before, so it was very exciting for me. I kept my mind open. I didn't exactly know what to expect. I was worried that I would actually get lost watching it, but I'm surprised that with the narratives, I could actually understand each scene well, and I was looking forward to actually watching the entire play. Yes, I would see another one by Shakespeare Demystified, because they have actually made the play really simple and easy to understand. However, I would have doubts if I was asked to watch the entire Shakespeare play using Shakespearean language for 3 hours, because the level of Shakespearean language is just too deep for me to understand. The narratives made it easier for me to relate to the play, actually, because there were explanations in more layman English for me to expect what I can expect to see in the next scene, what sort of expression I can expect from the actors and actresses in the play itself. If it wasn't for the narratives, I would have been just scratching my head and wondering, okay, what is this guy really talking about?
This is the issue. Is this dumbing down? Are people listening to the narratives, which is in contemporary English, and therefore, really, what was done is...
Well, this is a problem, right? In some ways, because Shakespeare and the language of Shakespeare from that period has been fetishized. And so there's a refusal to let Shakespeare transform and the language transform. Because as soon as you make Shakespeare and the language contemporary, you won't have the problems that that person spoke of, not understanding what's going on. Because precisely as a playwright, you would write it so that people understood. But we have fetishized it because Shakespeare is canonical. And we can't. We want people to somehow appreciate the language as it existed 400 years. And that seems to be the problem.
But that's why you have done it in a way whereby contemporary times, people can understand them better in bits, you know. And I think this is a good move.
But if you move away from the language, is it still Shakespeare? That's the question.
Dom, I want to ask you, hooked on classics, you look very young, so you might have missed this moment in music that came, I think, the early 80s. But, you know, was that an advance? Was that a help for classical music to have Mozart put to some sort of disco rhythm? I mean, you know, what did it do? Do you know Hooked on Classics, Dom?
Yeah.
It's like Greatest Hits kind of thing.
Yeah,
right?
It's not only Greatest Hits, but it was also
But I just like
up.
Mozart for Mozart and not by adding anything else that wasn't Mozart into his music. Right. I'm just that kind of person, I guess. I don't know how younger people in the teens right now, they might enjoy techno Mozart, for example.
Yeah.
I wouldn't, because I'm a classical musician as well. So putting this in Shakespeare, I'm not a Shakespeare fan, to be honest, because I don't understand the language. Maybe something like Shakespeare and Mystified would help me understand and appreciate Shakespeare, but I would still be one of those that would not sit through a whole Shakespeare play.
But the fact that if you took the language out of it, then you could have Romeo and Juliet as West Side Story.
And what's wrong with that?
No. But then it's altogether a different thing.
But is it still Shakespeare?
Of course it is. I mean, depends on what you want Shakespeare to mean. Shakespeare authored the story. He was, you know, put it together, gave us some metaphors, and constructed the dramatic tension that continues in all the different forms. Right? They remain. I mean, Lady Macbeth's motivation, you know, and you know, and her husband there. I mean, that doesn't change. Whatever the language, whether it's sparse and contemporary or it is Baroque and, you know, Shakespearean.
I was just wondering, what exactly defines a Shakespearean kind of language? Like, for example, when
you kind of it to run, is that Shakespearean?
Literally, it would be the language, you know, first folio, correct. Second folio, I know. Whatever.
I know. But the thing is that when I watch a Shakespearean play, being played out in its entirety, I can actually understand what they're saying. Because those words are not unfamiliar to us, although the way they put together, the way they express is different. But again, by just selectively looking at the words, and then you kind of understand how the words are being put together, you're able to guess or even to try to make the meaning out of it. So I don't think it's that difficult.
You're actually right. And I think, in fact, we know Shakespeare had very different registers any play, and he must have had a variety of audiences, those who would get the classical allusions, those who didn't, those who came for the vulgarity
and it's all there.
And, you know, and those who came for the more kind of highfalutin and poetic. So, yeah, I mean, it is the world. I mean, Shakespeare is the world, right, in some sense.
Should there be more Shakespeare then? If you couch it in terms of fetishizing of Shakespearean language, should we have more Shakespeare? Should we continue to have this fetish?
Well, this is something that's being left for us, you know, from the colonial times, in that sense, right? Because I think United States people don't actually talk about Shakespeare that much. It's only like the Commonwealth countries, and
you'd be surprised how big the whole industry is.
Yes.
How many Shakespeare festivals are held in America, in Australia? I mean, basically in English-speaking countries.
Yeah, but I feel that locally there is a certain kind of Shakespeare has a very privileged position, and it will be around.
I mean, you don't need to legislate these things, right? Will decide. I mean, the relevance of Mozart and the classical musicians of that time, I mean, they come in and out of fashion, right? You know, maybe that's the fate that Shakespeare will suffer as well. But, you know,
after 400 years.
As long as schools are...
Yeah, you still have to learn it in school anyway,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So it's part of the
Shakespeare
canon,
Shakespeare is here no matter what.
Yeah.
There is a market demand.
And in fact, Shakespeare demystified the company and the series will probably carry on. Ka-ching. Ka-ching. I can hear the cash register.
It's not that easy. Not that easy. Okay, folks, we have to bring this to a wrap. We've talked way too long. Richard Chua, Dominic Luke, Sharad Kutan, thank you all. This is Front Row on a Bigger Picture. See you on Front Row, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.